So, it is December 14th, 2021 at 5 p.m. and I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Waters and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting. I'll call the roll. Ann Price. Looks like her screen is frozen for a minute. Cameron Bogus.
Here.
John Carlton. John, you got your voice on?
Yeah, I did say here, but can you hear me? Okay.
Thank you, I can hear you now. Tom Donahue.
Here.
And Ann Price.
Here.
Thank you. For the record, all directors are present. Item 3A, the minutes of November 9th, 2021 business meeting. Are there any corrections or questions?
Hearing none, I'll move that we approve the minutes of the November 9th, 2021 business meeting.
I'll second it.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes of November 9th, 2021. All in favor, say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
My screen is still delayed for some reason. I'm not sure why, but
that's okay. The meeting minutes have been approved unanimously. Thank you. Item 4A, financial report, accounts payable for 11/15 and 11/30. Are there questions on the payables?
Yeah, I got some. But if anybody else, I got them. You got them in your list.
Tom, do you want to go ahead while Cameron's finding his notes?
Okay. On the 15th, we had two checks from the card service center for Michelle's retirement, which was about $414. I thought we paid for that last month.
We did pay for part of it last month. This was the catering bill that came after we had done AP already.
Okay. And I noticed at the end of the month, we had an awful lot of refund fund checks on Shore Drive, the Stucker Ridge, and Camp Streets. There was one other one, I can't recall right where it is. What were all those for?
When someone sells their house and they have a credit on their account, we give them their money back.
Oh, all those people sold their house?
We sell probably 30 houses a month. Unfortunately.
Okay, that's my only question.
Now, on those resale of the houses, is there like a connect fee that is transferred, or is it automatically done?
They call us to set up their account, and there's a $15 transfer of ownership fee.
So, 30 transfers, that's quite a bit of money that kind of turns over on.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Cool. Are you done, Tom?
Yeah.
I've got a question. I was looking at our phone, our CenturyLink phone bills, and that, why is there a difference between a couple of the phones and stuff?
They go to different accounts based on internet, phone, telemetry. If you look up those particular account numbers, they each have a different category.
Like the one that's 167.13, the 105.04.31, blah, blah, 20702.
Yeah.
And then is that one of the phones?
It's not like a cell phone. It's our physical phones at the authority. We have several of them, but those aren't all individual. It's all lumped together. Each of those line items, one of them would be internet, one of them would be, well, two of them, 104, 105, would be internet, one of them would be phone specifically, one of them would be for telemetry. And there's one other one, but I can't think of it off the top of my head, and I don't have my chart of accounts with me. Apologize.
Okay, well, that's okay. All right, cool. There on page 2, I think it was DeGranger, iron out for $172.50.
It's a chemical that we use at Horn Creek.
Oh, okay. I do believe that's it. Thank you.
John?
Just a couple of things. Can you remind me what the Nationwide Retirement Solutions is?
That is our 457B for our retirement as employees.
Okay, thanks. And then the other question I had was on it was to Schwabi, but there were some legal fees last month, I think around $900 or something. What was that for?
I think that was correspondence about water rights, but I am not 100% on that. I can look at it tomorrow and send you an email.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'll entertain a motion. Yeah.
I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for November 15th and November 30th of 2021.
I'll second that.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payables for 11/15 and 11/30 of 2021. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion is approved unanimously. Thank you. Item 4B, fiscal year report 21-22. Any questions on that report? Hearing no questions, we'll move forward. Item 5, the manager's report. John, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Really not too much this month in the manager's report. Overall, pretty quiet month. We'll say that just a COVID-19 update. All staff members in good health, and we haven't had any real COVID-19 related issues to speak of. I will say that I had Thanksgiving with my family, and it turned out that a couple of my family members, including my daughter and granddaughter, did get COVID from Thanksgiving. Luckily, myself and Melody and we had no issues and continued to test negative throughout the precautionary period. But happy to report that my family, all family members recovered quickly with very mild cases, and we've got that issue behind us. It just does go to show, though, you know, even family gatherings, you know, sometimes you just can't be too careful. So as you guys are celebrating your Christmas holidays, you know, hopefully you are with family, but don't let your guard down. It's it can happen when you least expect it. So also just wanted to mention we're still waiting on one vendor or supplier quote for the upgrade to the lift, to a couple of the lift stations that we're wanting to pursue. Once I get that, I will review those and come to the board with my recommendation. It will take board approval because it's going to be in excess of $25,000, which is, I think, the amount that I have to come to board approval for. Did want to elaborate a little bit. I mentioned in the last couple of managers' reports that we had our survey, our sanitary survey from the Oregon Health Association, the drinking water program there. It was back on October 12th. We've been waiting for the follow-up report. We just received that report last Friday, and very, very pleased with how well we scored at the authority with our our public water system. Just a couple of real small minimal findings, but one thing that I felt was pretty cool is that the drinking water program has what I call an outstanding performer rating for these surveys. And the reward is among just, you know, feeling good about getting, you know, a good survey, is that instead of every 3 years, our sanitary surveys are reduced to once every 5 years. And I'm very happy to report that we were designated as an outstanding performer by the state of Oregon based off of our last survey. I'd like to take credit for that. I can't. I just wanna mention that the foundation for this was laid long ago with people like, you know, Leonard and Ray, and you know, can't say enough about the job that Tony did to position us well here, and definitely want to recognize Michelle too, because she, you know, she wore a lot of hats and made a lot of sacrifices to keep the authority running smooth. You know, she's certainly done a lot to over her tenure with us, which was quite long, to lay the foundation so that we can perform this well during a sanitary survey. So I just wanted to recognize those folks that came before me and have been here the whole time. They're the reason that the authority and our public water system is, you know, is running so well, and is really been recognized among some of the top in the state of Oregon. So very pleased to share that with the group.
John?
Yeah.
Will that help us anything as far as our certificate or anything like that for our water rights?
Well, it certainly couldn't hurt, but I don't think it'll be a strong factor in that. This is more the operations of the treatment plant. I think they'll probably look at, you know, good stewardship of the water sources, and, you know, I think we do a good job with that. But it couldn't hurt, Cameron. But I don't think it'll be a big factor. Anne's got her hand.
Yeah, I just, John, I appreciate that full description and appreciate the credit that you're giving to everyone on the staff, and I'd just like to join you in thanking them for all the hard work and the attention to detail that results in this type of recognition. So please do that at your earliest convenience.
I will do that for sure.
John?
Just a couple of things. One, to piggyback on what Ann said, I just wanted to thank the staff and tell them how amazing I think this is. You know, we talk about sometimes when we're doing the authority manager performance evaluation how difficult it is to get a sense of how things are going on the operations side and how do we assess that. And I think this is a really good example of the real world giving us feedback that, yeah, we are doing it right. And so please express my thanks to everybody, because I think this is a really neat thing, and it gives us an ability to kind of to see how we're doing in the real world. So please extend my thanks to everybody for that. I think it's fantastic.
It is a team effort. And I couldn't be more proud of the team, and as I pointed out, we owe a lot to the people that have been here a long time and came before some of us, and I'll definitely relay those messages to you know, to folks like Tony and Ray and Michelle for sure.
Thank you.
And then one more question. You had mentioned, I think, either last meeting or the meeting before, that I know we're doing the upgrades on the lift stations, and I think it was at the Beachy Bridge lift station that potentially was in a weird mix with this Kiwanda Corridor project that was going on. And I just wondered if you had any more information regarding that, given that we might be sinking a lot of money into that.
Yeah, because of some of the uncertainty about that end of Kiwanda Drive, there's been talk about, I've heard rumors of a roundabout and a variety of other things. And because of that, we've decided to not include Beachy in this round of improvements. Instead, we're going to substitute Straub. Our goal is to do two of these lift stations in the near future, and then a year from now do two more. And I think that, for the most part, will get us in pretty good shape from a lift station standpoint. But because of that uncertainty, I've switched gears a bit, and we'll hold off on Beachy until things are a little more certain in at that end of Kiwanda Drive, and we'll substitute Beachy instead, which is another lift station that is in need of refurbishing.
Sorry, just to clarify, so we're doing we're going to do the Kiwanda lift station and which other one?
Straub.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. That's all I had on the manager's report. Thank you.
Cameron?
John, the lift stations, are we around as far as our expenditures of what we budgeted for those lift stations that have been repaired? I mean, are we pretty close to what we budgeted money-wise on them, or what needed to be fixed on them?
Yeah, we are. I've based off of the quotes that I've received from two of the potential contractors. We do have money that is available for this, and we are so far, based off the cost estimates and quotes we received, we are on target based off of our budget and what we've got allotted for these upgrades.
So as far as now Beachy, of the potential change of that, is that going to increase?
Well, I'm not sure what's going to happen down there. There's what I'm a little concerned about is that there'll be some push to relocate that pump station to some degree. I don't know, just because of the uncertainty, I'm not sure I'm in a good position to answer that question, but I think, it's certainly a pump station that needs the upgrade, a lift station that needs the upgrade, but it's just too much uncertainty about, possibly needing to relocate it. They're talking about installing some additional public restrooms down on that end of Kiwanda that may increase the loading to the pump station. As I think a lot of you know, you all know that there's an apartment complex that's slated to go in down in that part of town, and this could all put likely will put additional loads on Beachy. And it's possible that an upgraded pump system may have to be installed, but it's so much of it is unknown right now. I'm just not sure about that, which is one reason we've decided to hold off on doing anything at that location until things become more certain.
So moving it, is that going to be on our dime?
I wouldn't think so, but it's awful early. But if the project, the corridor project, requires us to move it, I think that there are some mechanisms in there for additional funding.
Okay. Thank you.
John?
Sorry, I ended up having one more question that I missed. You mentioned in the manager's report, John, that Parametrics had come out to do a warranty inspection on the wastewater treatment plant upgrade. And I'm just kind of curious as to if you had any feedback on the results of that. I know my experience is that coastal living and salty environments tend to accelerate wear and tear, so I'm interested into what that kind of feedback was from them.
Well, it's still kind of in process. I'll just to let you know a little bit about the background of this is Rural Development contacted us, who's the agency that's handling the loan that we received for the wastewater treatment plant upgrades, and they have asked, inquired as to whether Parametrics had come out and done a warranty inspection. Well, as it so happens, Parametrics was out there a month prior to look at things and to see how things were going and to get feedback from us about how things are going. Some of this is a little unusual to me in that I would guess that some of the warranty periods are probably behind us. It's been, 2018, 2019 since the plant was commissioned. But this is something requested by Rural Development anyway. And when Parametrics came out, we talked about a couple of small items that weren't working quite the way that they were designed or that, never quite functioned the way as intended. The only thing that we've been able to identify, and I've involved some of the long-term operators of the facility into this discussion, is the magnesium hydroxide system that was originally installed. We had a lot of trouble with. We've changed chemical. We've gone to a magnesium oxide product, I believe it is, and we've also rerouted the conveyance system and the injection point for that. And we've got the system working pretty well, but really in talking to some of our operators that work a great deal with the SPR systems and the using the upgrades that were done, there really aren't a lot of issues. The system is, in general, is working very well. We're achieving BOD and suspended solids reductions that I had never seen in my career in terms of just the percent removal and the performance of the facility. Overall, the facility is performing extremely well. There's just a couple of these, odds and ends that we're currently summarizing and jotting down, and we'll share that information with Rural Development. But I think in terms of the design of the facility, I don't think there's much to complain about. And in terms of any individual piece of equipment that's maybe conked out sooner than it should have, well, that would be a warranty issue we'd take up with the manufacturer of the equipment. So, I'm not sure about all the Strecker for wanting this warranty inspection, but Rural Development wanted it, and I think they're just trying to protect their investment.
Great. Thanks a lot, John.
And the only other thing I would add in regard to manager's report, and I didn't list it, but just to give you a sneak peek, I'll report on this in the manager's report next month for sure, is we've been working with WAVE to run fiber optic line out to Horn Creek. And although we had some initial trouble, initially they were having trouble getting the fiber optic line pulled all the way through. We're talking about like almost, I think, 1,700 feet from the road to the treatment plant. I'm pleased to report that that fiber optic line has now been pulled all the way through. And the only follow-up work for them to do for us is just to get their, just to do the terminations now that the line has been brought into the building. So we will be fully up and running with fiber optic at Horn Creek very soon. And the timing is really good because we need to upgrade the SCADA software and some other things at Horn Creek. And the ability, now that we have this fiber optic, it gets people, the integrators and control technicians, the ability to remote into our system and to achieve a lot of work remotely as opposed to having to come on site, which will save time and save money. So I'm very pleased to report on that as well. And if there's no additional questions, I think that wraps up the manager's report.
Thanks, John. Okay, let's move on to unfinished business, item 6, and start with A, water wastewater master plans. John, do you want to update us on that?
Yeah, I've been met with Parametrics several times, and they have committed to having the water master plan completed and to us by the end of the month. There was, in their defense, there was a little bit of a holdup on it, mainly revolving around the uncertainty with the pursuit of the water rights certificate and the subsequent or the needed plant expansion to facilitate that. There was also some questions about where to locate the additional water storage reservoir that is critical to the next 20 years of our operation. I have, for the sake of progress, I basically told them to assume we will be pursuing the water rights certificate, and we'll be doing the required upgrades in Horn Creek. I told them to assume that for the purposes of the master plan. I also told them to, in terms of the location of the storage tank, to basically just say in the master plan that, you know, we've there is an identified need for 200K of more storage, but the exact location of that, the exact location of that water reservoir is still under review. So for the sake of progress, I've given them thumb direction on that. Some of it doesn't nail some of the details regarding these issues down precisely, but you know, we can, if need be, if we feel it's necessary, we can always do a small update to the water master plan, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, like we did after the water master plan that we had in place, or that was completed for us 20 years ago. So, happy to report we should be seeing that water master plan very soon, within the next couple of weeks. And in terms of the wastewater master plan, I just had a meeting with Parametrics to go over some of the detail with that. So they're also and currently working on that. And they feel like they're fairly close to having a draft of that done for us as well.
Sean?
Thanks. A couple of questions. One, I know that we've been talking about this water rights thing, and in last meeting, John, you had mentioned that you might be talking about it a little bit more this meeting. Just kind of as an idea, do you have a, what is the date, what's our kind of our cutoff date? Like, when do we have to apply for these water rights?
Well, we'll say that when I first started raising a red flag about this, I was under the impression that the water rights, the deadline for making a decision and acting on that was about a year out. Well, since then I've learned that we have more time. It looks like we actually have until 2025 to make a decision here, which, you know, so we've got 3 to 4 years now. You know, it doesn't mean we should wait. I'm happy to know we've got plenty of time. But if, you know, if an expansion of the treatment of the Horn Creek facility is a necessary precursor to perfecting our water rights permit, you know, that's a fairly big job, and it's probably something that we shouldn't wait till the last minute to pursue anyway. So I am glad to find out we've got more time than I initially thought. I'm still planning to come to the board with this topic as a new business item to discuss it in more depth. I'm not quite ready to do that yet, but I'm very hopeful that within the next month or two I will be. I'm just trying to get all the information I can and come to the board with the most accurate information that I can get. It is a complicated issue.
Good. Thanks, John. I appreciate that, because in my mind it's kind of like a year is the minimum amount of time we might need to tackle some of this stuff, or 9 months to a year. So I appreciate that. I was starting to get a little nervous there. And then the other thing I would just say is, you know, you mentioned briefly in regards to the master plans, you know, that it's possible that if need be, we could do a supplemental addition to the master plan in a couple of years. And I would just say, man, I'd really like to avoid that at all costs, if at all possible. Even if it meant taking a little bit of extra time now, I know we really want to wrap this up, and I'm certainly anxious to see these things. You know, we've got time in terms of you know, statutorily when we have to do this thing. I think the last master plan was in 2010 or 2006, but it's certainly far less than 20 years. And so rather than, you know, maybe have to come back and do it again and do a supplemental in 2 or 3 or 4 years, I'd say let's put in the time now, avoid having to add that cost to the district 2 to 5 years out from now. Thank you.
Cameron and then Tom.
Is your thought process as far as the water rights to do another SIGID or to help with our water rights? I mean, are we drawing the cart before the horse as far as what if we don't get the water rights and we put up this skid and it's not really going to benefit us in a way of...
Cameron, that's a really good question, but since that issue is not on the agenda, I think as moderator here, I need to pause us on any more discussion about water rights until John gets that information to us and we can have a full board discussion having had it on the agenda.
Well, how much time are we looking at that we need to start addressing that in the next 3-4 years or now? I mean, just for the thought processes,
I think what I heard John say is that he will have information in the next 1 to 3 months for the board so that we can have that discussion.
I'd like to start doing some research and kind of getting ahead in my mind of things that probably might need to be, you know, looked at. It's going to be a this is like a different avenue of different things and stuff, and I'd like to be a little bit more on the ball than what I am instead of just being in the dark. So that's where I'm coming from.
Thank you. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, well, I've already been wrong about the date that our permit expires, so I just, you know, I really want to be sure that when I come to the meeting to discuss this, put this on the agenda, that I'll have all my ducks in a row and be able to provide everybody with the most reliable information I can.
Thank you. Tom?
John, where are we on the wastewater master plan? What has Parametrics, they given you a date when they're going to be ready with that?
Well, I've been, they haven't given me a date. I do know, and as I say, had a meeting with them today just to go over some of the data on the wastewater master plan just today. I can't tell you that progress is being made. My goal is because they're working on three different plans for us concurrently, counting the water conservation, our management conservation plan. I'm trying to ratchet up, you know, put the most pressure on the water master plan because that's the one I think we've been waiting for the longest. And it's also the one that we've already seen a draft of and provided comment on. I'm putting the most pressure or the most emphasis on the water master plan. Once this is done, my attention's going to transition to the wastewater master plan, and my emphasis and pressure for them to get that to us will be the next. Although the water conservation plan does have a hard and fast due date, which is April 1st of next year. So I haven't gotten a firm time frame on the wastewater master plan, but I do have a pretty significant evidence to show that they're working on it. And as I say, we were going over some of the data today, so... I'll try to get a date from them on that, get them to put a pin in the calendar. I'd really like to get the water master plan in our hands first, and then I can shift my attention more to the other one.
Thank you. All right. Item 6B. This is the board workshop review, the meetings that we had with Rob Mills, and we're taking one item at a time. I hope that you've had a chance to go back to this document. The next item on this document is about individual powers separate from the powers of the board, and I'll just very briefly read it. So district board members have no individual powers separate from the powers of the board, and have no authority to act individually without delegation of authority from the board. If a board member acts without authority from the board, the individual can be exposed to personal and district liability. And Rob's comments on that was that one or two of our board members seem to have difficulty fully accepting the boundaries on their authority imposed by this principle. In the absence of a comprehensive delineation of the authority its members don't have, board members must rely on basic understanding and good judgment of its members. Continued discussion of specific examples should lead to better understanding of the implicit and explicit authority PCJWSA board members have so that they may exercise good judgment. And so we are charged with discussing that particular issue tonight. So I'll open it up for comment. Yes, Sam?
The thing that occurs to me here, one thing that I think works well is when in doubt, kind of reach out to the chair of the board for a discussion prior to taking any individual action. Because I think the underlying principle is very clear, but there are times when people can get themselves in a conversation that they want to take further, but it's always good to stop and think, should I or shouldn't I? And consulting with the chair of the board, I think, is a good step to take.
Yes, Sean?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure if you knew it, Ann, but I think you really said it pretty simply and made a rhyme at the same time. When in doubt, reach out. I mean, I think that pretty much sums it up pretty well. And I'll just comment that I was thinking about this in the context of this discussion. And I think I made this comment when we were all meeting with him personally, in person, which is kind of funny that we actually did that at one point. I think a lot of these things come back to what I call a fine line, right? I mean, there's we want to make sure that we have interaction with our constituents. We also want to make sure that we're not overextending our roles and stepping into a role outside our responsibilities as board members. And that could be a fine line. And I bet I've been thinking about sort of this upcoming water right issue that we have that thankfully is now pushed out further than a year, which I think will help because this is something that I think is really important that we get the community to interact with us on. And in my head, I'm kind of trying to make some distinctions as to where that fine line is. And so just to give you all an impression of what I think it is, you know, I absolutely feel that I need to have interaction with our constituents in our community on that water right issue. I mean, I think this is a big deal in water and conservation, and especially as that redirects the costs. I think we need to have that discussion with constituents, and I think that we need to be open to having that discussion with constituents, but at the same time, I think we need to be able to understand that there's a technical aspect of it, and I know for me there's a technical aspect of it that I'm not comfortable discussing. So on one side of the fine line you have, yes, I absolutely want to interact with our constituency and I want to have to get their feedback, but on the other side there's a technical side of it that I think is beyond my capability, and for that aspect of it I want to refer that to John. And so I think that just kind of circles back to what Ann said, you know, when in doubt, you know, have that discussion when you're comfortable with it and get some feedback from the community when it comes to the technical side of it where you have some doubt, then reach out.
Well stated, John. I think I might add to that, Sean, what you said is that there are so many, being on this board for me is very different than being on other boards because water and sewer are such a highly regulated industry that the board in making decisions and communicating with people has less of an ability to choose A over B if the subject matter is something that's highly regulated. And our customers don't always understand that everything isn't necessarily our choice because we are bound by not only regulation, but we are bound by how things work, whether it's the hydraulics of the system or the way things get disposed of or the pieces and components that we are required to have in place. And so if I put my opinion out there too early and don't have all that data, I can be the instigator of unintended rumors. And I think that thus far, this board has been very purposeful in trying to make sure that with staff and with the board both, that we're trying very hard to make sure the information that's out there is correct information so that we can gather information, opinions, and comments from our customers. But we don't have enough information sometimes to be able to do that. And like you said, that's when we want to definitely refer people back to John. So thank you for that. Cameron, any comments?
Nope.
Tom?
No comment.
Okay. Moving on then, item 6C, the revised employee handbook. John?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to let everybody know that made just a couple of very minor edits to the employee handbook based off of discussions we had during the last board meeting and some recent additional thoughts that were shared by a board member or two. The edits are very, very minor, but they are in alignment with you know, as I say, some of the things we talked about during the last board meeting and so forth. The employee handbook has been on the agenda for a long time and been reviewed and discussed and analyzed pretty thoroughly. I'm content with the version, the latest version we have now. One thing I want to say to the board is that an employee handbook is really something that should be revisited and reviewed every 2 to 3 years as opposed to every 9 or 10 years. The state of Oregon is fairly progressive in enacting new nuances to labor laws. And just to be sure that we keep those, that we account for those, I believe the employee handbook is something that doesn't need a total rewrite, but definitely needs to be reviewed on a 2 to 3 year basis. What we have now, I think, is a good version. I believe it's probably a good place to stop for now, but what occurs to me is, and Rochelle reminded me of this as well, is I think it needs to be adopted by the board, and I'm hopeful that my recommendation is that the board adopts the handbook as it stands now. And as I say, we'll do another review in 2 to 3 years. But I feel like we've gotten a lot of comment. We've incorporated a lot of comment. We've had a lot of discussions about it. It's been on the agenda for a long time, and I'm satisfied with the product as it stands now. So if the board agrees with me, I'm thinking we probably need a motion to adopt the employee handbook in the version that it's in now.
Cameron?
Yeah, John. Now, did legal go back? Didn't you say the last time before that legal had looked through this and stuff and we were pretty well much, and we're also in compliance with all the other
legal laws, labor laws and stuff?
Yes, we've had an HR specialist look at it. Rochelle, I think you can perhaps have more information about the legal consultation if one was done with this. Perhaps when Michelle was heavy in the revision process. I have not personally addressed or approached legal counsel about the contents of the handbook, but I can tell you that it's consistent with what our HR specialist has indicated is appropriate and legal. And I can say that recently I attended a training session on employee handbooks, and this handbook has adopted a great deal of information out of the Oregon State employee handbook template. And I do believe that it is in a good legal spot right now, and that's probably the best way I can answer your question.
Now, would job descriptions also be in with the handbook, or that be total as far as something separate?
That's a separate thing. Yeah.
Okay. And we're going to be revisiting that also.
Periodically we review job descriptions. Later on the agenda, I'll be talking a little bit about job descriptions and so forth. But it is a separate issue. It's kind of a complementary thing, but it's looked at separately.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make a motion that we accept John's revised vision.
I'll second.
Cameron, could you restate that motion that we accept the employee handbook revised date of 2021?
I make a motion that we accept the revised vision 1221 of this year.
It's November 2021.
Oh, okay. But today's we're in December, so anyway. All right. Revised November 2021 employee handbook that has been updated.
Thank you.
Do I need to second that again? Or?
Please, thank you.
I will second the revised motion from Cameron.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the employee handbook revised as of November 2021 for PCJWSA. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is approved unanimously. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Item 6.
Good job, everybody involved.
Thank you, Cameron. Item 6D, Water Management and Conservation Plan.
Not too much to update the board about at this point. This is an effort that is ramping up, and I'm confident will be completed on time. But yet, it's only been a couple of months since we approved the contract for Parametrics to complete this for us. I will say that I'm beginning to take a harder look at some of our water loss numbers that we report. We still seeing some inconsistency in these numbers. Still seeing a higher percentage than we'd like to see. I will say that since we've replaced all of our residential meters, I think we can rule out the billing water meter side of this of this equation. I'm beginning to suspect that our wellhead water meters are over-registering. I do not believe we're losing this much water. I do not understand some of the inconsistency from month to month. If this was water loss in the distribution system, you wouldn't expect it to be good some months and bad other months. I believe that the propeller meters that we have on our wellheads are over-registering our production. The reason I say that is during the months when we run the wells a significant portion of the time, our water loss numbers tend to be noticeably higher. And I'm looking at options for that, including replacing these propeller meters with more accurate magnetic meters. But the reason that this is important is, we've got to get a handle on this one way or the other. It's the inconsistency that confuses and concerns me the most. It just doesn't make any sense. And but I will say that we do, as an authority, have to take this seriously and have to try to get a handle on this. If it in fact is over-registering water production meters, we need to find a solution for that, because it's going to be hard to write a water management conservation plan if we don't get a handle on this and are able to explain it and to resolve it. And, another thing to consider in terms of potential water rights in the future. This is a very important thing, something that I'm making a top priority, and we've got to get to the bottom of it. As I say, and I want to reiterate this, I don't believe we're losing this much water. I just think that we have some over-registering production meters that are making it look like we're losing this water. So I just want to mention that to the board. This is something that I will be talking more about.
Cameron, and then
Sean
and Tom.
When was the last time any of this stuff has been updated? I mean, we're kind of moving ahead of ourselves, with our new meters and stuff, and to catch up with some of our old inadequate pumps. Is that a possibility? Or what other areas could it be? Lines like Rupel? Losing water out of that, that's an old, inadequate line. Some of the old lines that we have in there, is there any way of doing any tracing type of?
Well, one of the things I'm looking at is doing a water audit. I'm looking at doing some soundings for water leak, but I don't believe that this is a water leak, because if it was, you'd think it would be consistent month to month. How do you get 20% water loss one month and 3 the next if the reason for it is a leaky water line?
Now, is it with the wells, when we're on usage of the wells? Or?
Well, what we see are more are higher water loss numbers during months when we're running the wells, which is why I'm suspecting that those older, less sophisticated technology water meters are perhaps one of the reasons that we're calculating this. I'm looking at all the possibilities and everything.
A lot of variables.
Yeah, but I think we've replaced all of our residential meters now. It seems like we ought to be able to check that off as a variable. But I think it's time to look with a critical eye on our production meters and to make sure that they're not what's causing not only the higher water loss numbers than we'd like to see, but also contributing greatly to the variability.
Thank you.
John?
John, at the risk of sounding like I know what I'm talking about, one of the things I've been thinking about over the last couple of months is, you know, that time frame that we are drawing water out of the wells coincides with the time frame that the turbidity of water at Horn Creek is high, which is the winter months. And so, you know, is it possible that, like, for instance, with the AC pipe, that in the winter months there's expansion and contraction of those joints in the AC pipe, and that could contribute to some leakiness because of some substandard parts of our distribution system?
Well, I would say, I guess I wouldn't rule out anything as being possible, but what I would say is if our distribution system was losing water at the percentage that we see during some of the winter months, even with the wet weather, we would see evidence of it. I really believe that if this was a water leak or a series of water leaks for distribution systems, we would see evidence of it. We're just talking about two substantial amounts. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't continue to look for water leaks. And one of my goals is to get some better equipment to do soundings of water line to try to find hidden water leaks. But we're talking about way too much water. If this was leaking out of our distribution system, I believe it would be impossible not to notice it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
John, I haven't looked at the graphs this month, but seems to me if we had a 20% water loss one month, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 million gallons. Is that right, or am I way off?
That's right, and that's why I'm very skeptical that we're leaking that quantity of water.
That makes sense. My other question is, we have 6 wells. Do we have an impeller type meter on each of those, or are they put together, or groups of 2 or 3, and have a meter on the groups, or does each well have its own impeller meter?
Each well has its own propeller meter. This is basically a mechanical device in the stream flow that spins, and the how fast it spins is in direct relation to the velocity of the water going through.
So approximately, we're going to need, we have 6 wells, so we need 6 more modern meters. Approximately, how much and how do they work magnetically?
Well, what my plan is not to replace all 6 propeller meters. What my plan is to install a single magnetic meter on the common line for all 3 wells in each location. By doing so, it'll save money. It'll still capture the entire flow collectively from the wells, and this should be sufficient to tell the tale. The mag meters, the nice thing about the mag meters, and they're generally plus or minus 0.5% in accuracy, which is 4 times what propeller meters, the accuracy of propeller meters. But mag meters have the advantage of not having any mechanical parts in the stream flow that can wear or have trouble registering if you know, flows kind of vary through across the meter. Bank meters are just a hollow tube, and what they do is there's a couple of grounding rings on each side of the tube that mate with the pipe flanges where we drop the meter in. There's nothing, no mechanical pieces in the stream flow. It uses Faraday's principle to calculate flow rate, and that's one reason that they're so much more accurate and reliable than propeller meter.
Approximately how much money, what I thought I heard you say is we're going to have 2 meters instead of 6. And how much do these meters cost approximately?
I'm still working with suppliers to get that information. I don't quite have it yet. Bank meters tend to be, because of their accuracy and reliability, more expensive than ultrasonic or more expensive than propeller meters. But I think that I think these are only 4-inch lines, maybe 6 at the upper extreme. I think we can do this without real significant expense. I think we can do this fairly economically, and by only replacing 2 as opposed to 6, we can also save a significant amount of money by approaching the problem that way.
Makes sense. You'll have more information on that?
This is an important issue. I'm keeping you informed as to what I learned and our progress to solve this mystery.
Thank you.
Cameron.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, when Kurt brought in this, our monthly flow chart, you know, it really has helped to be able to look at this and see the differential, because I was going to ask you about that in my question, because I had brought it up last month, that the unaccounted unbilled water, and and I'm just wondering if it is because of that we are on the wells on those months, and then it drops back down in the summer.
Well, that's definitely the trend. There does seem to be
less correlation
to that, but in general, we're seeing the highest readings during the winter months.
All right. Thank you.
All right. I think we've answered all those questions. Let's move on to 6B, COVID-19 continuity of operations plan. Anything on that, John?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, I had introduced the plan to everybody at the last meeting. I did get comments from one board member that I thought were very good and valuable. I'm wondering, I guess the reason I've got it on the agenda item again is just to tell the board that if there are no further comments, I'll consider this matter completed, and I'll push this plan down to the staff for implementation.
So that's nothing we need to vote on?
No. No. Thank you. All right. Moving on to new business. John, the proposed operations supervisor position?
Yeah. Well, this is something I've been thinking about for a long time. I think, as you all know, there is a position it's a position that we attempted to fill, my understanding, a while back. It was an assistant authority manager position. I've given a lot of thought to the needs of the authority in terms of something like that. And my determination is at this time, I don't really see a need for an assistant authority manager position. I would say that my opinion about that will change in 3 to 4 years as I get closer to retirement. And we definitely want to have a succession plan for somebody like me. You know, I think that's very important. But in looking at the needs of the authority right now, what I think the authority needs instead of this position at this time is, you know, what I'm calling an operations supervisor position. This is my vision for this is that this would be an internal position. It would not be a new position. It would be the creation of a position that we would promote somebody into. My vision is that it would be a salaried position, although it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. What I believe the needs of the authority and what would help me the most, and I think really help the authority the most, is to have a position that is dedicated to overseeing the work of of our field crews, of our utility crews, of our operators, a position that can make sure the scheduling of employee schedules are such that, you know, we always make sure we have somebody on call, always be sure we have good coverage, somebody that can help to prioritize and to schedule and assign needed work and projects that are out in the field, somebody that can oversee that work, be sure that work gets done correctly, and just as important, be sure that work gets done safely. Sometimes it's hard for me to get out of the office, and we need somebody in a position that we can trust to make sure that the work taking place in the field is done correctly, done safely, prioritize that work, schedule that work. And, in terms of, an assistant project manager or assistant authority manager position, well, I guess to put it simply, what would help me the most and I think what the authority needs the most is at this time, is not another general. I need a field lieutenant, if you know what I'm saying. We've got at least one person that's already doing this, but has never been recognized or compensated for it. And I think that this is something that the authority needs more now than an assistant authority manager position. And I apologize for submitting my attempt at a job description so late. I've had a lot of irons in the fire. I did create a proposed job description for this position. I don't think I gave anybody on the call time to review it. If this is something that I could convince the board to adopt, I'd certainly carry this over another month so that anybody that wanted to provide review have the time, adequate time to provide review and comment of my proposed job description. I would welcome that review and comment as well. I don't really know what else to say about it, but, you know, one of the most important concepts is this is not the creation of a new position. I'm not asking to hire an additional employee. I'm just asking to create this internal position. And I do see some benefits, other benefits to it that I haven't mentioned. You know, it'll give our other employees another thing to shoot for, another option for future promotion, where you don't have to go from an operator two or something straight to an authority manager, and there's nothing in between. You know, so I see that as something that would benefit the authority going forward, in the sense that it gives our employees that haven't quite reached that point something to shoot for, something to strive for, and something to pursue. The second, another potential benefit is, you know, some folks during some of the board members during the discussions surrounding the employee handbook lamented the fact, and perhaps rightfully so, that we did not have enough levels of management to give employees additional options about people they can turn to or talk to if there's any issues going on with them in the workplace. This would create another a level where employees have more options and you know, just additional avenues to approach management at the authority if there is something that they're concerned about or unhappy with. So, anyway, I'll leave it at that, and if you guys have questions, please let me know.
I think there's quite a few questions out there. Tom, you were first, Cameron second, and then Sean.
You mentioned the employee handbook. I noticed supervisor, the term supervisor comes up quite often. And traditionally, this organization has had some very key people that we call lead workers. And I think that this is a really good idea. And I briefly looked at your job description, and I noticed your comments here could be either salary or otherwise. And I think that a lead person is a non-exempt person who would be able to take overtime. And a supervisor is, as you pointed out, a management position. And management positions should be salaried or non-exempt. So when we consider, if we consider doing this, I think we should consider salary as a very important thing, because if a person's making less money as a manager, than he or she would as a lead person, that you're going to have a hard time filling it, especially if it's an internal position. So we need to discuss the salary options a little more closer than at this opportunity here, and that's probably when we should do it next month.
Good point, Cameron.
Well, we've been, how many years has it been that we've had the assistant manager that we've been trying? I've been against the assistant manager. I don't think that we need one. To have a operations supervisor versus a, you know, salary or non-salary rate, wages. I'd like to see it go out to the outside instead of within, because if you're talking about somebody that's going to maybe eventually move into John's job, I think it needs to be somebody with more because we had discussed it during our job interview process, that there was a few candidates that would be a good assistant manager or somebody like that. I'm all for that. I would like to see it go outside, not within, if it's going to be a sovereign position. And and a little bit more responsibilities, financial, because the overwhelmingness of budgeting and the things that John's been going through, he's often, you know, six other directions, and I think you need somebody with more technical experience than what we have on at hand. But I think we need to discuss this more also at the next meeting. Everybody's input. More time to soak it up.
Thanks, Cameron. Sean?
Thank you. Where to start? I'm really glad, John, to hear you talk about this as a potential internal position, because I think that makes a lot of sense. One of the things I was trying to wrap my head around when I was reading through the description that you sent and the email that you sent earlier was, you know, we've had these discussions before about a potential assistant manager, and I kind of got the impression from your email and your description that this was a different position than that, and so to hear you talk about how this might be an internal position really changed that thought process that I had. And first of all, I 100% agree with your thought process on that. I would just say a couple of things as food for thought for you. One, I think that that job description between what you proposed, what we had had before in our thought process as an assistant manager, I think there's some massaging there that can improve that. I think it's interesting that there is I don't know where the line to be drawn is between whether it's an exempt or a non-exempt position is, although I think it'd be fun to go down that particular pathway. And I was glad to see Rochelle hold up her fingers in terms of how long we've been talking about this. I think it might have been...
Years.
Yeah, I think you know I need to put another finger in there. It might be four. It's been around a while. But I really, really like the idea of this being an internal position. And so, just to put it out at you, I would very much like to be a part of helping craft the job description for that, because I think there's some positivity and some excitement there on how you do that job description and how that can change the dynamics between sort of an internal position and where those strengths and benefits are, and I for one would like to be a part of that. So I applaud what you're doing. I very much want to be an active part of it. I think it's a great idea. And I would just add that I think that there's some importance that we think about how we have thought about that in terms of the budgeting process in the past and where that falls into place. I'm not entirely sure from a budget and slash compensation standpoint that the job description that you submitted is sort of in line with that compensation, but I would very much like to be a part of that.
I'm going to echo virtually everything that Sean said. When I read this, I was really very excited about this job description and the concept of this position. Because I think, and as we've indicated, we've talked about an assistant manager for several years now, and I think our thinking has evolved and stalled at times on that for a variety of reasons. And I think that now, looking back, it's a good thing that we did stall out on that effort, because I think this is a much better solution. And the assistant manager concept, I think, would have been too top-heavy administratively for a small operation. And I completely hear what you're saying when you say you need a field lieutenant, and we don't need any more generals. And I've been in organizations that had way too many generals and not enough field lieutenants. So I really, really take this as a very positive idea, and I'm all for it being an internal position. I love the idea of being able to, as you were talking, inspire new professionals in the water and sanitary treatment profession to have steps that they can see concretely in front of them where they can improve their background, and it gives them a reason, a stronger reason to learn on the job and more advancement examples. And just lastly, I think because of Sean's particular background, I really hope that he will be very involved in these conversations with you between now and the next board meeting. So, thank you for this.
Thank you, and if I could just add a few other comments. I think if I remember correctly that the assistant manager job description got started when Sean Lambert was still on the board. So that was at least 4 years ago, if not five. And I think we looked at creating that position for two reasons. One was because of succession issues, and two was because we had discovered that the authority manager position was, the responsibilities of the authority manager were just too much for one person. And so, as Ann said, we started down that road and stopped and stalled and restarted and did our best. And at this point, based on John's strength in the role, that as he has said, the best way to serve the authority is to have another lieutenant rather than assistant. And yet, at some point in the future, we might consider pulling back into the authority manager position for the purpose of succession for a short period of time. Again, all of that is quite a ways down the road, but at this point, I think John has laid out very clearly to us what the authority man with the operations supervisor position would look like, and I do so much appreciate that work. And I also would encourage John to reach out to Sean because of his expertise in this area. Sean and I worked on a number of things, and it was very clear that his skill and experience is there and would be an asset at this point in time. All right, so we'll have this on the agenda for next month and do a thorough discussion at that point of all things with regards to this issue. Item 8 on the agenda, just questions and comments. Did we have any questions or comments come into the office?
No.
All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to director comments. And before I forget to say this, the board decided, and I can't tell you at what point, that when we had a new authority manager at the six-month point in that position, that we would do an interim review. That 6 month is coming up. And so I will send out to each of the board members the form that we use for evaluation. And if you would all fill that out and get that back to me, I'll put a date on it, and we will put an executive session on our January meeting to go through the review. I'd like to remind the board that your comments are confidential and are not to be shared with regards to this review, and I hope that you're able to use the form and put your comments in place so we'll pull us that together. Are there any questions about your particular process or what someone may have a need for? Yes, Tom?
I thought the form that we used last time was inadequate, uh,
because some of the questions related to the reviewee, or in this case, John, his interaction with employees, and we as board members really have no way of knowing how he interacts with employees, because we don't see his interaction day to day or week to week. And so I think those questions need to be eliminated or revised.
All right, I appreciate that comment, Tom, and we certainly can look at that issue, but since we're looking at doing this in the next 30 days, I think we need to move forward with the form as it is, and there is a place for additional comments, or you can write in that you don't think that this applies and put your initials on that, and I think that it would definitely be acceptable. Are there any other... Yes, Cameron?
I'd like a hard copy form, please. I don't want to do mine on the computer.
You'll, in order for it to be included, you'll need to do it on the computer, but I can certainly get you a hard copy.
Get that to you.
Okay.
Don?
Are we in director comments period?
Yes, we are.
Okay. A couple of things, just two things, I think. One, I just wanted to say to John that I had a grease trap inspection this month, and so I'm very excited about that because, in my mind, grease trap inspections are kind of a proxy for how well things are going. And when things are rough, I don't get grease trap inspections, and when things are going good, I get them all the time. So I was very happy to have a grease trap inspection because that kind of keeps me on my toes and allows me to get an idea of how stressful things are at the district. The second thing I want to say is that Rochelle made an example of holding fingers up to the camera, and I just want to say that I hope there's never one finger held up to the camera. So, thank you all. I love you all.
Thank you. Yes, Cameron.
I've got a couple questions. With all of our COVID expenditures, are we next year going to have to do a line item separately for COVID or any of that funding?
Well, I'd like Michelle's thoughts about that. I will say that our COVID expenditures haven't been very high. I would like to get some additional, another delivery of the rapid test kits, although they've been hard to come by. But Rochelle, what are your thoughts?
Most likely we do not need to make a completely separate line item for it. It can go into half water, half wastewater. It won't be, they're not high enough to make a huge difference. We're not spending hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay. All right. Also, I'd like to see maybe next month that we're back in the plant for our meetings instead of doing them on the computer.
I wish.
Well, I would like the board's thoughts on that, if I can chime in. I think I'm definitely hopeful that we can get back to that point. Just please remember... what I mentioned about my Thanksgiving dinner, but on the other hand, you know, when we're with family, we're not really focused on mask wear and stuff. But I would be willing to, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's largely a board decision, and I can accommodate whatever the board would like to do.
John?
Thanks, Cameron, for saying that. I think that's an important thing to bring up, and I think that we do need to get back to in-person meeting. Not quite sure we're there yet, but I absolutely agree with Cameron that we need to get back to in-person meetings. And so I think, in my mind, things are still a little bit stressful, but in the next couple of months, I think we should continue to have that discussion and think about getting that back into the program.
All right.
Well, you know, Sean, you had brought up a couple months ago, well, we had discussed about having the community meeting and stuff, and I've had quite a few people that have said something about that, and of course the COVID had set us down, so eventually I'd still like to keep that on the possibility of getting, having a community meeting at the community center.
Yeah, I agree with you, Cameron. I think it's hugely important. And, you know, at some point we're going to hit the point where this thing is going to become endemic instead of pandemic. And I don't think we're too far away from that.
Right.
I think the new variant with the Omicron is a little bit concerning. But, you know, the reality is we're going to have to live with this thing for the rest of our lives. So we have to start having some discussions about how we move forward and how we incorporate this and how we get back into things. And when I think about things like, you know, adding additional water rights, or when I think about things about water master plan or wastewater master plan, I mean, these are all things that are crucially important for our community to have an input in. And so we have to have that as part of our discussion. There's, in my mind, there's no way to move forward on those things without community support and without community interaction. So we have to have a public meeting at some point. I'm not quite sure we're there yet, but I think we're close. I think you're right to bring it up. I think we need to have it on our thought process, and I think we need to start thinking about when we're going to do it, A, and B, if we're going to have some of these big, potentially large dollar situations, then we absolutely have to find a way to have a public meeting about it.
Well, I went to the bazaar, the Christmas bazaar, and people were so happy. The community center was packed, and people, it was like, man, everybody had, it's like a feel of community there, and it was really an awesome feeling, and it's like, everybody's still concerned about the COVID, and everybody's taking precautions, but I think we need to start moving on in the direction instead of, you know, still being afraid. Yes, we need to be that, but be cautious and start moving forward. I've got another couple questions. How many new connects have we had in the last month?
Rochelle, go ahead.
Zero.
Zero?
We're still at six.
We're still at six? I mean, man, there is a lot of building going on up all around, so they haven't busted in yet to buy connects yet. Okay.
Correct. They have not asked for water.
They kind of go hand in hand. Did we have any connects last month?
Not that I am aware of. I'm pretty sure we've been at six since October.
Okay. Also, how many possible water connections do we have within our boundaries?
Like empty lots plus lots that have already been filled?
Right. I'm trying to think down the road for water rights and stuff like that.
Currently, we have 1,454 connections. And I believe Ann and Carolyn can speak better about how many empty lots we have, but I think there's hundreds. So, a few.
Ann, go ahead.
Yeah, we did an inventory of tax lots within our community boundary several years ago. That community boundary is, it's important to always point out, is not identical to the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority boundary. Mm-hmm. So the inventory that we did for the community boundary would have shown a few more lots that are actually in the water sanitary mm-hmm. boundary. So, but one of the things that came into the discussion when we were doing that inventory was that it's not sufficient to just count a lot, because you could count a lot in an R2 zone, which would allow for a triplex on it. Mm-hmm. So you're not talking about just the lot being one house. It could right. be a duplex, it could be a triplex, and each one of those is a connection. Mm-hmm. for the water sanitary system.
Kind of like the apartment.
As well as, that's a different ball of wax because of the way we structure
residential, commercial.
Yeah, that's actually on commercial property, and but yes, in terms of the tie to the zoning regulations. So it's very, very difficult, if not virtually impossible, to give a single answer to that question.
Won't that be important? Wouldn't that be important to all this stuff for our water rights and our upgrading and things like that? As far as I know, we can't forecast where we're going, but as a thought process of, you know, with the magic ball.
I think it's an important concept. I agree with that, but it's not something that you can nail down to the nth degree. So it is something to keep in mind. And I think in the master planning process, there's always discussion about expansion of the area, of the needs in the community. And so I think that engineers and experienced people in the industry, like John, have gone through this process many times in many different venues, and I think their background and knowledge and expertise is most valuable to us.
So how long has it been since we've done, we've looked at that? It's been, 5, 6, 7 years?
Cameron, you're right. It has been a number of years, but the complexity of it comes when you take a look at, say, the Meyerstein property, which counts as one lot, and it has been discussed about putting 200 homes up there. So that throws any prediction way out of whack.
Oh, sure. Sure.
So,
but I mean, it's what we have, you know, to look forward. Just as it was just a question, I was the possibility of what we have upcoming. And I know they do the growth percentage for us and all that. Okay. And another question. When we had quite a few people in the rears, are we still just the same people that are in the rears? Or has any of that changed, Rochelle?
Most all of those people have paid. There's probably 3 or 4 that have not out of 17, so that's pretty darn good.
And did they contact you for the help that we were...
Not a single person contacted us for a payment plan.
And the ones that are in the rear didn't either?
Nope.
That's sad.
Wow.
Sean, you had your hand up.
I did. Just a couple of comments to Cameron and Ann's discussion. Having walked a lot of Pacific City for that audit that we did, my recollection is that we were about 2/3 built out. That's a ballpark number, but I think that's close ballpark-wise. We were about 2/3 built out. I mean, obviously that... I can never remember the name of that property up there on the hill. That might be 200. But I think we were around 2/3 built out. So, and I believe, if my recollection is correct, that Parametrics has considered that in terms of the last master plan. So I'm hopeful that they're considering that in this current master plan process that we're going through. But it would be worthwhile checking in with them to make sure that they are considering that potential build out. Down the road. If my memory is correct, it may not be, but our population versus our population equivalent, and this is our NPDES permit, I think we're about 2.3 times. In other words, I think we're 1,000 person population, but all population equivalents in terms of that NPDES permit is 23 or 2,500, I think. So, you know, there's definitely a huge influence of visitors, of tourists, of all that kind of stuff. And so that makes it hard to make any kind of projections based on the fact that we're two-thirds built out, but where that build-out goes in terms of whether it's commercial or vacation rentals, you know, those are all things that I hope that Parametrics is paying attention to.
Right. I mean, I'd like to see something like that. Hopefully that is in there. So, thank you.
I think in the 2005 master plans, Parametrics did a thorough evaluation, and then there was the economic analysis afterwards that had even more detail in it. And I am, if I'm understanding correctly, that as Parametrics moves forward with this, that they have someone under contract that will do the economic analysis, because that's what feeds into what our SDC fees are. And our economic analysis person that we had for 20 years has since retired. So I think that if we look, go back to the scope for the master plans, that was included in there. And Cameron, some of your questions, I think, are included already in the draft, some of the answers to that.
Well, it'd be interesting to see where we were then and where we're projected to go, how where their estimate, how the formulas that they used then will hopefully help us again. So, all right, thank you.
Any other comments?
Everybody's doing an awesome job.
All right. Hearing no more comments, it is 6:46, and I will adjourn our meeting. Thank you very much, and have a great evening.